I think the main question that people have is, creature, what is it that you want?
Fred, what we want is, I think, what everyone wants, and what you and your viewers have, civilization.
Yes, but what sort of civilization are you speaking about, creature?
The niceties, Fred, the fine points. Diplomacy, compassion, standards, manners, tradition. That's what we're reaching toward. Oh, we may stumble along the way, but civilization, yes. The Geneva Convention, chamber music, Susan Sontag. Everything your society has worked so hard to accomplish over the centuries, that's what we aspire to. We want to be civilized. I mean, you take a look at this fellow here. Now, was that civilized? No, clearly not. Fun, but in no sense civilized.
Welcome to Double Impact, the podcast where we double back on the movies that impacted us growing up as 90s kids and decide whether they hold up today or are best left in the past. I'm Tristan.
And I'm Greg. Good to see you, Tristan. Good to hear you. We're back in our separate places of residence.
Yes.
And audio, everything's working. Video, Dolby, 4K.
It's seamless technology. It's like working in a smart building, you know? With all of this seamlessly connected devices and technologies, and it's amazing.
Yeah, it is.
But we're in sequel town this week, Greg.
We are.
Sequel to a film we did a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
Gremlins was one of our early episodes. Well, yeah. I was listening to our Gremlins episode today, and that was, I've got to say, side note, it's always nice when your research for the pod can include just listening to one of your old episodes. But one of the highlights was your wonderful Mogwai impressions.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they're good.
Yeah, look out, Howie Mandel.
That's a cue.
Oh. My guy.
There you go. That'll do.
Yeah, that wasn't my best. I kind of choked mid.
That's okay. Mid-Mogwai. You can't start at 11, man. You start there and you just turn it up.
Down it up. Maybe it's a bald thing because Howie Mandel has about as much hair as me.
That's true. That's what it is.
Maybe we're Mugwais. Maybe bald men are Mugwais.
Maybe. But yes, it's a sequel. And, you know, we haven't done too many sequels. I think often because the sequels are often cherished franchises and rushing to do a sequel just is one step closer to finishing the franchise. And in this case, this is the end. For now, at least.
It's a door closing.
A door closing, exactly. What was once a door opening is now a door closing. Gremlins 2. 1990 was the year.
There's talk of a third, so, you know, you can still kind of see through.
That's true. The door is like ajar, maybe, still. Yeah.
It's very astute on your part.
What can you tell us about 1990, Greg?
Well, what can't I tell you about 1990, Tristan? The 80s are no more. Of course, it's very famous for the unification of Yemen.
Ah, of course, yeah.
However, I thought I'd take us back to the sporting world. We covered the infamous, I should say, Tyson Holyfield ear nibble scenario a few episodes ago.
Yes.
So we've got more Tyson today. It's more bad news for Tyson, which I don't want to make this a theme because I'm obviously a big fan. I've said that. But 1990 was the year he very famously lost his unification of the heavyweight titles to one Buster Douglas. Are you familiar with this scenario?
I am not.
This was a big one, a huge one, still regarded by many as – well, one of the greatest sporting upsets of all time. So Tyson at this point is every bit the celebrity. He's in his relationship with Robin Givens, which at that point was quite turbulent and there was a lot of alleged abuse in the press and such. He was partying a lot. There was a lot of contractual battles with his manager and Don King. So he's got a lot of stuff going on outside and he's really sort of, I guess, succumbed to the celebrity world and all the pitfalls that are attached to it, which we've since known to be part of Tyson's sort of early downfall. So this was sort of like the catalyst of all that. So he was due to fight Buster Douglas in what was widely regarded as a tune-up fight before the big fight against Holyfield.
Right.
So I think Buster Douglas was ranked number 7 by Ring Mag, number 7 heavyweight in the world. Tyson was not unanimously, but pretty well regarded as the number 1 pound for pound fighter in the world, which is not common for heavyweights. And just generally, like,
outside of Frank Dukes.
Outside of Frank Dukes.
Yeah, of course.
The analysts thought this was going to be over in half a round. Like, a lot of places you couldn't even bet on it. And if you could, it was like 40-something to 1, which is unheard of odds for boxing. So you get the idea.
Yeah.
And the fight just didn't go that way. Tyson, which he's famous for his head movement, for his slipping, for his ducking, just was pretty flat-footed, throwing, you know, single punches, trying to land a, you know, the big shot early, which isn't really his style. And on the other hand, Buster Douglas, who was a much taller guy, used his reach, jabbed away, and kind of just took control of the fight. Tyson came back late, knocked him down, but it was kind of too little too late. Tyson didn't even have a cut man in his corner. They didn't even have ice packs. That's how confident they were of beating this guy. So it was a big deal. And late comeback from Tyson, but then it was sort of too little too late, and I think he got KO'd in like the 10th. He was just a bit worn down.
He's in big trouble. He may not be able to recover. It's up to 7 and 8. He's not going to make it. Unbelievable. 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 Buster Douglas is the new heavyweight champion of the world.
And then after the fight, there was a bunch of controversy. Tyson tried to say, or tried to claim it was a sort of like a no contest or sort of a robbery, because he had knocked Douglas down, and there was controversy around the length of the count before he got up, which he since abandoned, and it was all rectified. But funnily enough, Bobby Brown wrote in his autobiography that, so this was in Tokyo, this fight took place in Tokyo. In Bobby Brown's autobiography, he talks about how he was with Tyson the night before his fight.
Yeah.
Okay. And Tyson didn't even sleep. Like, he was out partying and just was like, this guy's an amateur. I can fight him after 5 weeks of no sleep.
This feels like exactly that scenario. Before he even got to that, it's like, it sounds like it's all adding up to partying too hard, thinking he's got this. Fuck.
Yeah. Distractions outside the ring. I don't know what his camp was like. And that was a big one. And Buster Douglas, unfortunately, didn't really last too much longer for him. He defended his titles against Holyfield 8 months later, and I think he got stopped in about the 3rd round. So he didn't really go on too much from there. But down as, you know, one of the biggest upsets in sporting history isn't a bad accolade to have to your name if you're Douglas, less so for Tyson.
How old is he now, this Douglas fella?
Oh, he'd be 60-odd, I think.
Yeah, right. Jake Paul will probably fight him soon then.
James Douglas. Buster Douglas. Jake Paul would probably be calling him out. That's very astute on your part.
Yeah. And then he'll be like, you know, by logic, that means I beat Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
I beat the guy that beat the guy.
Well, he's trying to, I think his brother's trying, like, agreed to fight Tyson, hasn't he?
Really?
Yeah. Logan.
You know what? Jake Paul is so unlikable that he makes Logan Paul extremely likable now. He seems like the nice one.
Yeah, it's all comparison, isn't it?
Actually,
Jake Paul is fighting a boxer soon. He's fighting Tommy Fury, who's a relative of heavyweight champ Tyson.
Yeah, right. How related? It's not his son or something, is it?
I think he's like his cousin.
And Tyson is actually named after Mike Tyson.
He is.
Yeah, I saw that recently.
We're big friend of the show.
Yeah.
Love big fans. Tyson Fury.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit more boxing trivia. Maybe we'll weave in a good Tyson story soon.
Yeah.
Mm.
I've been watching Will Smith's got a new show on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
called Best Shape of My Life or Worst Shape of My Life. I can't remember. But he's in the worst shape of his life, and the goal is to get in the best shape of his life. And like the whole thing, the whole his whole routine is a bit is set up like a fight camp, like pre-fight camp kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. It's interesting for a few reasons. A, because like the worst shape of his life is not that bad.
Mm.
Like it's he just looks like a human.
He just looks like an average Joe.
Yeah.
Or not even.
Yeah. And then the cynical part of my brain's like, you know, he's just had a book come out and that's quite integrated into it too. He's trying to sell a book. But I will say, you know, having it's not exactly the same as the Tyson thing. It's kind of the opposite, really. Not that I've been partying that hard because we've been in lockdown, but just the fatness hangover of lockdown and watching Will Smith in a similar situation has been very motivating.
Oh, that's good.
So it's like a bit like Tyson after that fight. It's time to pull up my bootstraps and get back on top of this shit, you know?
Yeah, well, Tyson did go to jail a couple years
ago. I'm going
to
skip that part. Yeah.
So maybe don't follow his path too closely at that point of his life.
Yeah, that's a good call, actually.
Focus on current Tyson.
Yeah.
get into weed, the weed business.
Oh, man. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
How do we do that? Because, man.
Really? A guy I went to high school actually now has a weed farm up there in the somewhere.
I mean, there were definitely some weed entrepreneurs in high school. I wonder what they're doing now.
Probably more Tyson's earlier years.
Big year for Buster Douglas. Big year for the box office. Big year for the movies, the pictures, the talkies.
Was it?
Yeah. Number one that year, a little film called Ghost, otherwise known as the film that made Greg cry.
Oh, my God.
It's the year of Home Alone. Pretty Woman. Oh. Dances with Wolves. Total Recall. Back to the Future Part 3. Man, there's some big ones this year, man. Kindergarten Cub. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And many more. Child's Play 2.
Is this our most done year?
It might be because there's a lot here, isn't there?
There's a lot.
There's a lot.
No wonder I'm running out of things to say.
But there was a little film, Greg. A little sequel.
Mm-hmm.
Came in at number 33 that year, a little bit to unpack there. A little film called Gremlins 2, The New Batch. June of 1990, not Christmas, notably, because I was curious about that. We strategically kind of slotted it in here because neither of us really knew if it was at all Christmas adjacent. We're like, if it happens to be around Christmas, then awesome. If not, whatever.
I had a bit of a Mandela effect moment where I was picturing the falling Christmas tree in Nakatomi Plaza.
Oh.
You know, that scene where he was towards the end and he's sort of running up some stairs and a Christmas tree falls down.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's not theirs, but does that – like, why am I picturing Christmas trees? Well, it's probably because they have the
Rockefeller.
We'll probably talk about this, but they have the party at the end. It's a more of a New Year's type affair.
Yeah. So June, Christmas in June perhaps.
A little segue there. Apologies.
No, that was my segue, and you simply yes-ended as is tradition.
Yeah, sure.
But
Christmas in June –
this is a bit of a plot twist. This is a bit of a record scratch moment. A budget of $30 million with a box office gross of only $41.5 million. Now, for context, Greg, Gremlins 1 came out in 1984. Budget of $11 million, gross of $153 million. Now, of course, 6 years earlier, so maybe the sequel was a little late. We'll get into that. But it was the number four, the fourth highest grossing film of 1984, behind Beverly Hills Cop, Ghostbusters, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. It's fucking crazy, man. And side note, 1984, what a year. But it's in the mix with those titans of cinema.
Yeah.
Yet the second one, not so much. Now, interestingly, critic score still relatively high, 71%. Audience score, 57%. Now, at this juncture, I will also like to call out that the first one had a critic score of 84%, also with a lower audience score of 78%, but not as much of a gap there, not as much of a delta. But it is interesting that both of these films have a higher critic score than audience score. It seems like the kind of film where it would be the other way around.
Mm.
Fascinating.
And we can touch on it in a bit more detail later. But one critic gave this one a higher score than its predecessor.
Yeah, including this guy. We'll get into that. I like it. Spoiler alert. Critic consensus, Gremlins 2 trades the spiky thrills of its predecessor for loony satire, yielding a succession of sporadically clever gags that add some flavour to a recycled plot. Those are some words.
Mm.
That was the sentiment, I suppose, at the time up until now. Perhaps I don't really know where these critic consensuses come from. But I guess that's no on the record. Does. That's on the ledger. That's what is attached to this film in I guess, popular critic opinion. But was this a big film for you back in the day, Greg?
I think that one was from the Chicago Tribune.
The positive one was from the Chicago Tribune. Is that the one you read?
There you go. No, I just guessed. It's quite often that I see Chicago Tribune.
Yeah, because I think that was Ebert's one, right? I think it was.
Oh, was it? Okay.
This must have been in the post-Ebert era. And there was a good review on it. We'll get more into that. But back in 1990, where was this big part of your life?
So was it a big part of my life in 1990? I'm not sure. Yeah, however, this film at some point, and I really haven't been able to pinpoint when in the 90s it was massive for me. Massive.
Yeah.
I reckon I've seen this movie top 10 of most viewed films for me easily is – Gremlins 2.
Wow. That's a youth well spent, Ben. Fuck.
I freaking loved this thing and I watched it so many times. Like, I can't, it's really frustrated me, but I haven't been able to pinpoint when, but I must have had it on VHS of some description, whether it was off the TV or whether it was an actual one from the video store that I got my hands on somehow. I had it and I watched it a lot.
Of course, this is the era where if you have something on video, like you've probably got like 5 videos. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. And this was in as high a rotation as you could have. There was so much because, you know, in Gremlins I talked about how that was a bit of a seminal movie for me. It was one of the first movies I ever saw.
Yeah, at the cinema.
And I loved it. And there must have been some attachment to that from the first one because this one was like more gremlins doing more things and then the gremlins that had turned into a spider and a gremlin that could talk, all these, you know, all the things out of the lab that mutated them into these sort of, what I deemed as these genius other concoctions of gremlins was so exciting and cool. Yeah. And that's kind of all that really mattered for me in this film. And the Rambo gizmo.
Yeah, I mean, all the things you've listed there may be the only things that matter as far as I'm concerned because fuck yeah, man.
And what about you?
It wasn't as big. Like I remember watching it, but I think I watched the first one a lot more. And I remember like very specific things like the smart one, civilized. Civilized. Yeah. I think me and Jono were like quoting that a lot when we were kids. Civilized. Mm. But other than that, it's like one of those ones where like, yeah, I've seen it never really, like I missed that initial window of when this would have been hyper relevant to me in the 90s. And then I just kind of forgot it existed for ages, probably until we did Gremlins 1 2 years ago, by the way. 2 years ago.
Yeah, right.
I was listening to the episode today and I mentioned that I was 35. And I was like, wow, it's a spring chicken.
you were mid 30s, which you were
mid 30s. Now I'm mid to late 30s. Yeah. It's been a journey. but yeah, as soon as we watched Gremlins 1, I think we talked about it a little bit in that episode. Like, I was getting some flashbacks to Gremlins 2, and then I was like, oh, I really want to watch it. But I'd consciously been holding back. There's some movies I don't care too much about, and I'll just watch whatever. But sometimes I really want to save it for the pod. I want to have like a pure rewatch experience. I'm not going to watch Fight Club now until we do it on the podcast. There's movies where it's like I really want to have a pure then and yeah. now thing.
Well, that's why we did Heat last week, because yeah. I really wanted to watch it, and I was like, we've got to do it for the pod. I'm not going to
– Yeah,
I can't watch it unless it's pod material.
Well, there's not enough hours in the day to watch that
well,
twice precisely. More than every 20 years. Yeah.
No, it'd be more than 2 years before. Yeah.
Yeah, so net-net, I watched it, but I don't remember it as much mm-hmm. as the first one.
Okay.
Should I get into the origin story?
Please.
Origin story.
By the way, that voice is friend of the show, Octavio Martinez, who we were supposed to be seeing this weekend, and I was going to record a little video of him saying origin story live. He's not coming to the barbecue no more.
No, he was coming. Now it's his sister-in-law's sister's brother's party.
Auntie's nurse, yeah. Some bullshit. Mm-hmm.
Get a lot of detail. When someone gives you a lot of detail around why they can't do something, it's bullshit. Just as an FYI.
Yeah. It's a classic Octavio move.
Yeah. Invented.
Classic.
It.
You're listening to this, Octavio? I know you are.
He's yelling at his transistor radio. Mid Monday morning.
I could really picture that. Yeah. this film, origin story. Now, it's a sequel, so that goes pretty far to explain the origin of this film. It's the second one, and the first one made money. But just to recap where the first one even came from, that was from the mind of a young Chris Columbus, not to be confused with the guy that...
He's being cancelled.
Invaded America. he came up with this idea... Living in New York and hearing mice scurrying around his apartment at night, and one might take a little nibble of his hand, and he thought, oh, or he would worry one's going to take a nibble of his hand. And he thought, oh, what if there were gremlins? And he was a young whippersnapper who wanted to make it big in Hollywood, and so he wrote up this concept. Into a spec script, not even a fully formed script, but more just as a bit of a, almost like a demo tape to say, hey, this is what I'm capable of, guys. I'm a pretty creative guy. I've got ideas, man. I can write some shit. And he really just thought of it as that, a bit of a taste, a bit of a sampler to show what he's capable of. Didn't think of it as actually a movie that would ever get made. But Spielberg thought otherwise. Spielberg saw this. Spielberg bought it. Gets Joe Dante on to direct, Bish Bash Bosh, fourth biggest movie of 1984.
Just like that.
Just like that is how it's done, kids.
It's good having Steven on your side, isn't it? Steven.
Oh, it helps. They're the whole Amblin engine. Now, the thing is big, of course. Naturally, the studio wants to make a sequel. Plot twist, Joe Dante isn't all that interested. Neither is Chris Columbus.
Oh.
Thinks this is a natural ending. We didn't have franchise fever back in those days. sequel not required. And Dante goes off and makes Explorers, Inner Space, and The Burbs.
Dante's Peak.
You'll be happy to know you made that same joke in the first Gremlins episode. But it was more relevant because we were talking about people peaking and you're like, was this Dante's peak? Anyway.
What you're saying is my jokes have deteriorated?
I'm saying you made a sequel that was worse than the original.
Yeah,
there it is. he makes Explorers, Inner Space and The Burbs, three movies I've not seen before we get to this movie. And in the meantime, Warner Brothers is trying to move forward with a sequel without him, and they're exploring different options. They're looking at sending the Gremlins to Vegas. They're looking at sending them to Mars. All great ideas as far as I'm concerned. But for whatever reason, it just never progressed. They eventually go back to Dante. They say, hey, we'll give you triple the budget of the original and you can have complete creative control. He says, you son of a bitch, I'm in. And I think with this creative freedom and budgets that he was allowed – like the film we ended up with makes perfect sense. He really wanted to push the envelope. He said it's one of the most unconventional studio pictures ever. He wanted to break the rules and essentially looked at it as a satire of both Gremlins itself and sequels in general. So really just wanted to like get loose with it, get a little postmodern.
Bit of loosey-goosey.
Yeah, pretty loosey-goosey.
Bit of Pomo.
Yeah. And you know what? I think, well, we'll get into verdicts a little while off, but did he succeed? Well, it's loosey-goosey all right. Bish, bash, bosh, you get gremlins over there in a building and then, you know, some green goo and some electricity, special
some
effects.
Dry
and you
ice.
Put lipstick on one of them. Yeah, some dry ice. Bish, bash, bosh, you go yourself a movie, right? Party down at the old Clamp Bar. No, down at that. Mm. What was the name of that Canadian restaurant they went to? That place.
The Moose Knuckle.
Rap party at the Moose Knuckle. Let's play the trailer.
Remember the last time? We told you not to feed them after midnight. We told you to keep them away from the light. And the most important warning of all, we told you to never, ever get them wet. You didn't listen.
Like to get wet?
Like to get wet?
They're mutating.
Sir, is the building on fire?
No, that's a false alarm.
Are you trying to panic New York City?
Absolutely not.
So the monsters are real?
I didn't say that.
Gremlins 2. The new batch.
Now, was that civilized?
No, clearly not. Fun, but in no sense civilized.
That was a kind of a strange trailer. I wonder how that translates in audio. Apologies if that is not at all useful. But visually, fun. Greg.
We had a great time.
It leaves
time.
A few gaps. We had a great time. It does leave a few gaps though, Greg. So perhaps you could fill those in for us.
Yeah, pleasure. Okay, here is my synopsis of Gremlins 2. Tristan, we've moved to the big city, the Windy Apple, the city so nice, they've named it twice, New York, Manhattan.
Yeah.
Or Metropolis. More on that later. Billy is working for Clamp Enterprises. They specialize in construction and town planning and sports and have a line of jam and jellies, many things.
Many things.
Global domination. There's a science lab in their main headquarters here up on level 52. It's a bit of an eerie vibe through this building, Tristan. The CEO is a bit of a Trump-esque meets Ted Turner type.
Yeah.
He's okay, but the business itself is kind of more like some sort of Nazi Amazon conglomerate where you get fired for taking a cigarette break. That wasn't planned, which was funny, wasn't it? So anywho, small town Billy, who we remember from the first one, he's immensely talented, but he's struggling to, I guess, assimilate or conform with the progressive postmodern vibe at Clamp. Katie's there too. She's like a tour guide in the building. So at the same time, Clamp Industries is trying to buy out our old friend Kim. If you remember from the first one, that's Gizmo's owner and carer. They're looking to redevelop Chinatown. He's kind of like the last bastion of defense, I guess, before this place gets torn down. Now, sadly, Kim dies and the wrecking ball is released. It all happens very quickly, but whatever. That's show business, baby.
Oh, did he die?
He dies, yeah.
How did I miss that part?
He passes. He was old and coughing and then he died.
He was very
There was
old.
A news report.
Fuck, that's
They
crazy.
Glossed over it. It was very glossy.
Yeah.
Not like Clamp Industries itself. So next minute, Gizmo's like fleeing for his life from the, you know, the wrecking ball, literally. And he's collected by these two creepy twins from Terminator 2. And guess where they were, Tristan? Clamp
no
Industries,
way.
Level 52. Whoa. Is it 52? Let's go with 52.
Yeah, why not?
So, Back to Clamp Enterprises headquarters, Billy overhears a courier humming the tune. Or whistling.
Played
or whatever.
By Tuco.
Who's Tuco?
You want to know this from Breaking Bad. But he's one of the big
well,
bad
I didn't
guys.
Know he was Tuco, but he's in heaps of stuff.
Yeah, he looks so familiar. And it took me, he's one of those guys that he looks quite different, older. Like he's filled out a lot and stuff. Like his shape of his face is different. But he's like, I know that guy.
Yeah, he's always the sort of scary guy. He's in Training Day. He's the guy who's like, you get your poo pushed. I have my poo pushed. You know,
he leans over the table. Yeah, I forgot he was in that because that was before Breaking
Bad. That's a scary scene. That's when it all goes downhill. But that's another movie. That's another movie.
Yeah, it's a whole other movie.
A whole other time. Damn, we're in 1990, baby. So he's worked out. He's like, hey, where you hear that? Where you hear that? And the guy's like, oh, up on 52. So he's like, oh, I've got to go up there because Gizmo is in the building. He knows that that could only be Gizmo.
Yeah.
So he goes up there, kind of cons his way into the lab and pinches him out of this very creepy laboratory where there's all kinds of things going on in line with the Nazi comparison. So he takes Gizmo downstairs, sticks him in his drawer, and he's like, okay, I'll leave him there for the day. Meanwhile,
what could possibly go wrong?
Possibly. So... at this moment, Clamp himself, Mr. Clamp, is taking an uncharacteristic, unscheduled tour of Billy's department.
Yeah.
And he sees some of Billy's work and he loves it. He loves it. Which is, you know, in stark contrast to the feedback he just got from his managers and those wanky pomo types.
Ain't that always the way?
Oh, yeah. Quite often it is. especially his mean boss, Marla. However, Clamp loves it. He's digging. He wants to be in the Billy business vigorously. Yeah. So suddenly Marla has a change of tune and she wants to be in the Billy business. So she starts, you know, the hard flirt and she whisks him off to dinner. He has to cancel his plans with Kate. And he's like, oh, and can you get Gizmo? He's got to meet the tractor guy from the first one. You know, we thought he was dead in the first one. You remember?
Yeah, I thought he was dead.
Anyway.
It's a strange choice to bring that guy back versus other people.
Great choice. Well, he's been in every one of Dante's movies, as it turns out. So anyway, back at the office, a bubbler repairman is a little bit loosey-goosey.
Yes.
And gets a bit of water on the gremlin and, well, you know, on Gizmo. And you know the deal from here.
Yeah, more gizmos.
More gizmos, more trouble.
And then they eat.
More fun.
More guay, more problems. That's a classic
as they say.
Goes. Yeah.
That was the first note of that song.
Well surmised, Greg.
Was it surmised or was it just like line by line of the plot? It was quite long. I wanted to give a rich, it needed a rich intro, I feel.
It did. And a lot of shit happens in this movie. And I guess there's some version of a plot that loosely strings it all together.
Of sorts.
This is the kind of movie, in watching this movie, this is the kind of movie I totally understand if people don't like it. I totally get it. But, man, I love it. I love it so much. There's like, I found in life there are some things. There are some certain pieces of art, some maybe some certain songs and yes, some movies that I just like. And sometimes I don't even know how to articulate why. Sometimes something will just hit all your notes and you're like, this is this movie, this thing, whatever this is for me. And I say that because sometimes I think when we do a movie like this, it's hard to critically break down what it is exactly. And I end up just going, I love this part. How good is this part? So I guess that's my warning that there's going to be a bit of that happening.
Well, you know, if you say je ne sais quoi, it makes it sound fancier and more intellectual, so...
You know what, Greg? I'd say this film has, how do you say, a je ne sais quoi.
A certain je ne sais quoi?
It's very astute.
Yeah, a certain je ne sais quoi. It's quite astute on my part to say that. And it just really has that for me. How was it for you? I mean, you're coming from a very different place having watched it so much.
Ah, that's right. It was interesting. It was fun, you know. It's just one kind of big party, this movie.
It really is.
Turned up to 11.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many you can point, there's so many holes in the plot or whatever, but who the fuck cares, man?
That's right. You've got all the gremlins for one thing, and those guys are pretty fun. I think we discussed that in the round one.
They know how to have fun.
And even the humans in this one, I feel they've turned them up to sort of gremlins volume. You know, you've got the lab cast, you know, the Siamese
redhead twins. Christopher
Lee. Yeah, like the White Wizard himself.
Yeah.
They're all weird as. This whole cast is peppered with, you know, strangeness. The main character, the main sentimental character, is dressed up walking around as a vampire. You know, like it's just it's so off key and unusual.
It's so funny. Enjoyable. It's so weird and enjoyable. And it's just like it's just unapologetically absurd. And the whole smart building premise, which mind you, I didn't even know they're using terms like smart building back then, but that feels very now, doesn't it? Like, anyway.
Yes.
But it just facilitates all this mayhem because then it just makes sense. You got all these things for the gremlins to play with, from like fucking potions or whatever those things are to TV shows and all kinds of shit. It's just so delightful.
You just jump from scene to scene of a gremlin doing something fun.
Yeah, yeah.
But they've obviously, it's like a skit show for gremlins. What if we put them in this scenario?
You know how we did Desperado a couple of weeks ago and there was that thing called, we talked about Robert Rodriguez, the one-man film crew and some of the principles that he has, and one of those being the Rodriguez list, which is if you want to make a cheap movie, you list all the things you have access to. It might be I've got a Cadillac, I've got a samurai sword, and I've got a miniature schnauzer. And Uma Thurman. And so you use that, you write a story based on having those things. And this is almost like, all right, how awesome would it be to have a talking one? It's like the inverse of that almost. It's like, what are all the things we want? Yeah. And then what's a plot that can make that make sense?
Yeah, we need the genius one. What about a spider one?
Why not a spider one? A bat one, an electricity one.
Do you reckon one of the guys goes, oh, and like a vegetable face one, and people are like, fucking serious? And they're like, okay, mate, we can have a vegetable face one.
And do they spend the most of the special effects budget on the vegetable guy?
You're happy, Roger? You're happy?
I just think he could have maybe a capsicum pop out of his forehead over there. Pepper. Bell pepper.
You got a zucchini out of your forehead, Roger.
It's delightful.
An eggplant, sorry, an eggplant. Damn it.
And then, you know what? It doesn't get any better. I'm a simple man, Greg, but it doesn't get any better than full body Gizmo running down the street. It makes me so happy. It's so funny, man.
I'm trying to impersonate it right now.
Yeah, Greg, sorry. I'm laughing so much because Greg's doing it. You've captured the essence there somehow. It's it's amazing.
His little mouth quivers.
Yeah, yeah. And in the opening of this movie, just to rewind for a second, well, I guess that's where we first see Gizmo again, but we're in New York. I love a sequel set in New York where it's, you know, like, oh, what's the obvious place to go to next? Oh, yeah, the monsters are now in New York. Like, it's pretty – I think that's what I love about all of these, pretty much everything in this movie. It's just elevating all the tropes that a sequel would do. But and we end up in Chinatown, and a lot of it is real New York, which again we see less and less of these days. And a lot of it is real New York. And my background, my Zoom background that you obviously can't see, listeners, is of a street in Chinatown called Doyers Street, which I thought was the actual street from the movie. And Greg, you can vouch for this. It kind of looks like it, right?
It's pretty cool,
but it's not the street that they used. Is the one fake street in the movie, or one of maybe a couple of that fake New York street that they have in Hollywood over there, and they dressed it up. But it looks so much like this very specific street in Chinatown, which is my favorite street, which I want to move to Chinatown, basically.
Yeah, right. 333 fake street.
Probably. Yeah, sorry. But, side note. Side note. Ara and I are moving back to New York, so we've been looking at apartments and things. And this just reignited my curiosity around moving to Chinatown over there, because it's fucking cool, man. Even just aesthetically, even, it's just got this vibe.
And access to dumplings.
Access to dumplings. And this street is the dumpling. There's a place that has Nom Wai Tea Parlor, which is where you get the good dumplings. It was there since the 20s.
Glorious.
But then when I was looking for this picture for my Zoom background, again, very visual thing for a podcast, but when I was looking for it, all these results came up that it was used to be called Murder Alley.
It does look a little bit sketch.
Yeah, well, notice it curves, again, like the street in the movie. And apparently that's a great for ambushing.
Oh, yeah.
So like in the early 1900s, the gangs would be killing each other on this street.
But Bill the Butcher?
Route, I would.
Gangs in New York?
Asian gangs.
Cameron Diaz?
Yeah, I think so. I think she played one of them. I think Scarlett Johansson will play one of them. Yeah.
Yeah, Scarlett Johansson would. Scojo would have picked up that role.
But anyway, my point there is a very vague one, that is just that amongst the many things that delighted me in this film was also the delight that is
your background.
Those lovely Chinatown streets. Some of them were fake, some of them were real. I think also, again, like the first one, I know there's a little bit of some gray areas around racism, but I think this one does a pretty good job of, people say some relatively racist things, but usually they're the butt of the joke. Like, the white guy that says something like, who said that, Confucius or Bruce Lee or whatever, he's an idiot, obviously.
Yeah, they're like, the bad guys.
Yeah, we're not laughing going, ha, zinger. We're going, you sound like a fucking idiot. So I think this film does...
Oriented or something. Was there some sort of play on words
about... Yeah, something like that, yeah.
But they're the bad guys.
Yeah, so it's nice to see a movie like this, which sometimes when you... Yeah, sometimes Nazis. When you press play, you're a little concerned that is it on the right side of that joke or not? And this one seems to be, which is a big check for me. Big tick, big tick.
Yeah, well, the whole show is about equality, isn't it? You know?
Is that right?
Quality of the gremlins. They just want a party.
That's all they wanted. They just wanted the party, man. They just wanted the sun to go down.
So you mentioned in the remake that they were scoping different places for this to take place, and one of them was Vegas. Now, as much as I do love this whole – the way they did this, and it's clever, Vegas is a bit of a gas, isn't it, for the gremlins?
Yeah. Some gambling.
Oh.
And maybe they see it taking a show.
The chips, the show.
You can have good celebrity cameos in Vegas.
Wayne Newton.
Yeah. Yeah, Siegfried and Roy.
Wayne Newton. Who loved Wayne Newton?
I don't know.
There was like one female lead of like a sitcom, and she was all about Wayne Newton.
Probably Marge Simpson.
No, she was Tom. She loves Tom Jones. Was it like one of the Golden Girls, or like one of the mums of
The Nanny, maybe?
Yeah, something like that. Anywho, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I've just got a list of stuff I like about this movie, but that's kind of boring. Is there bigger things we can talk about here? Let's see.
Well, I did. I did think the set you touched on it earlier. The satire relevance was, eerily relevant, wasn't it?
It's fucking crazy, man, because you're talking about Clamp, right?
Talking about Clamp, yeah. So, well, number of things. Clamp is this sort of, global behemoth corporation that's kind of taking over the world, cleverly done in their logo is a sea squashing the planet. And, with the rise of the billionaire and the situation we're in, sort of the rise of the billionaire through COVID.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But, gentrification.
Yeah.
I guess, the guy's trying to tear down Chinatown. We sort of see a lot of that still.
Yeah.
Automation and, the pros and cons of automatic lifts and.
Yeah.
And all those sort of things. It's all still relevant.
It really is. And, the whole smart building thing, like I said, like I didn't even know that was a phrase before the iPhone, like putting the word smart in front of things.
Yeah.
Maybe Steve Jobs was a big fan of Gremlins 2, the new batch.
One could only assume.
Yeah, and I also wonder, like, at the time, the idea of Clamp being so in so many industries, like from TV to this to that, I wonder if that seemed a little far-fetched, because now it's not at all. Because, yeah, the go-to is, Donald Trump meets Ted Turner. But neither of those guys did all those things. But now you could point at Musk, Zuck.
Bees Os,
and they all do all those things pretty much. We haven't seen as much of, with the magic potions, but
well, it's probably in that's there. Because it's behind closed doors, Tristan.
Yeah, that's it. That's like the baby. What do they call it? Oh, I've been getting in on this QAnon stuff from an out, not getting into it. I'm just fascinated about it.
We're pivoting our offering here.
Adrenochrome.
What's that?
That's what the rich people suck out of the kids they kill. Adrenochrome.
Oh, what does it
yeah,
do?
Yeah, so
powers you up.
Just makes you a billionaire. Yeah. You see the corporations, Greg. They got the
suck
adrenochrome.
The baby's adrenochrome.
Yeah. Yeah. And I on that note, Greg, of satire and the such, is it's not afraid to make a little fun of itself. You
That's
got things
right.
like you got the movie critic Leonard Maltin, who you just picked up a book from.
That's right. Friend of the show, Sparksy, randomly sent me a 1993 film almanac by Leonard Maltin himself. And then 2 weeks later we're doing this movie. And who's in it?
Yeah.
Leonard
Maltin.
Yeah, the
Side
universe
note,
provides.
We were saying that would have made a good podcast concept to actually go through the book and, like, is it best left in the past can be like we compare it to Maltin's review, what we think of it today. Anyway, we've already got a podcast, so it's redundant. Yeah. But but I love those parts a lot. There's that whole shit where the film itself, the film melts and you see the gremlins making shadows in the thing. So, like, if you're watching this in a cinema, you think the gremlins have taken over. It's this meta thing, speaking of billionaires, of, like, the cinema is being taken over by the gremlins that you're watching on the screen. Like, what? Imagine watching that in the cinema when you're a kid would have been mind-blowing. Even as an adult, would have been mind-blowing. It's like the ride.
It's like the ride, Tristan, which we talked about in the first app, Warner Brothers on the Hollywood on the Gold Coast.
Yeah.
The beginning of the Gremlins ride is that scene, and then the guy runs in and you get in the boat and you go.
It's so cool. I'm a sucker for meta stuff. And I think, I'm a meta sucker, I tell you what, I've always been. I think, you know, it can be a little bit cringe now that we're in the post Ryan Reynolds world, where him and the singularity of Ryan Reynolds becoming Deadpool. But I think, especially for the time, it feels like such a fresh idea of just completely, like, being so self-referential. I'm not saying it's the first or anything like that, but I think it's definitely going out the wildest. And the amazing thing that I love about it is, I didn't know this, but in the VHS release, they changed that to be a VHS effect.
Yeah.
So they changed that whole thing from being a cinema thing to being VHS.
To being the, tape.
The snowy shit, the snowy tape stuff. And then they're, like, changing the channels and you can hear the gremlins like, all that kind of shit. And then John Wayne comes out and he's like, hey, go back to your own movie, even though he died 11 years earlier. So I just love... We talked about this in the South Park movie, the South Park guys. I love the commitment to something so silly. The fact that they changed it for the VHS release, they didn't have to do that. I just love that they did it.
Yeah, attention to detail, really, isn't it?
Yeah, man.
It's the little things. My favorite, it's often the little things.
Yeah, it's the little things. It's the little things that you put all that effort into that other people don't. Those are the things. And my favorite is we obviously talked about in Gremlins 1, Phoebe Cates, who we haven't even mentioned yet. Jesus. Phoebe Cates has that random monologue about her dad dying dressed up as Santa Claus. And then they have a callback to that, which is a bit of a piss take of her original one.
Yeah.
Why don't I play a little bit of both?
It's so good.
We can get it. All right. So here's the original from 1984. It's a weird little tangent in the film, even for that one, even though it wasn't super self-referential or anything like that. It's a strange moment. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
It was Christmas Eve. I was 9 years old. Me and Mom were decorating the tree, waiting for Dad to come home from work. A couple hours went by. Dad wasn't home. Mom called the office. No answer. Christmas Day came and went, and still nothing. So the police began a search. 4 or 5 days went by. Neither one of us could eat or sleep. Everything was falling apart. It was snowing outside. The house was freezing, so I went to try to light up the fire, and that's when I noticed the smell. The firemen came and broke through the chimney top, and me and Mom were expecting them to pull out a dead cat or a bird, and instead they pulled out my father.
Gizmo's like, what the fuck?
In a Santa Claus suit. He'd been climbing down the chimney on Christmas Eve, his arms loaded with presents. He was going to surprise us. He slipped and broke his
neck. Well, he certainly did.
Died instantly. And that's how I found out there was no Santa Claus.
Red flag.
And I think that is – I think the benefit of doing a sequel 6 years later is you know what are the bits that everyone talks about as being potentially odd. And that one obviously had a bit of a thing. And there's obviously all that shit around when our main guy's explaining the rules of the Mogwai and people are like, well, what about in different time zones? Or what about this? What about that? It's all the same shit that we were saying on episode one. Like I love that they – happily poke holes in their own thing. Yeah. But that one specifically, she comes back with another story in this one, which is completely absurd about someone that looks like Abe Lincoln. I'll play the clip.
Yeah, play the clip.
These things get out.
We'll stop them, Billy. You can't give up now. Washington didn't give up. Lincoln didn't give
Please.
Up.
Please.
What's wrong?
Oh, don't mention Lincoln. Something terrible happened to me when you were on Lincoln's birthday. I was 6 or 7, and I remember I had the day off from school, and Mom had let me go to the park. She made me a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I was going through that peanut butter and jelly sandwich phase, and this man with this
Honey,
beard and a hat looked just like Abe Lincoln.
Honey, I really don't think we've got time for this now, you know?
I remember, Come oh, on. God, he said, hello, little girl.
I couldn't remember she started on that story. And it was just because he randomly referenced Lincoln.
Yeah. It's like, and they obviously just put that line in just so she could do a dumb story. It's like, that's up there. That's some Leslie Nielsen shit there for delivery from her. Like, that's MVP material, baby. That's fucking gold, man. I'm sure it sounds pretty good, but when you watch the video as well, like the way she delivers that.
Yeah.
Chef's kiss, man. Chef's kiss.
It's good.
So good. And the Rambo stuff, Jesus Christ, Greg. Talk about speaking to us specifically.
That's right.
Gizmo is inspired by the man himself.
Sly himself. He was on board with this apparently. I like it.
Yeah, right.
I like it. Okay, it's not happening. My throat's a little off.
Oh.
I'm just not gonna talk like anyone else, okay?
You do you, all right? Yeah. You're good just the way you are.
Yeah, I'm not even going to do Leonard Maltin.
Ah.
Give us a Leonard Maltin, Tristan.
Hey, I'm Leonard Maltin over here. I don't know what he sounds like.
Hey, I'm watching a movie over here. Forget about it.
Forget about it. Microwave with Marge, one of my favorite television shows within the movie. She gets progressively more drunk as it goes on.
The children noodle soup.
another tiny joke that I adore is, you know, they go out to a fancy, you know, New York's famous for its different cuisines. They go out to a fancy Canadian restaurant.
Didn't you have chocolate mousse?
The chocolate mousse. Can I cut you some more? It's almost, it borders on like Wet Hot American Summer humor. Like it's so ridiculous.
Mm. And it's so nice. You so mentioned much. Leslie Nelson was a very astute reference because, yeah, Phoebe and definitely Billy, he's like the perfect like sort of naive, bland.
Yeah.
In a good way. Like bland's
they've got that innocent
word,
thing to innocent, them. Yeah, I know like, what you mean.
He just, all this stuff's happening around him. He just plays it straight the whole time. Yeah, you're right. It is very, very Leslie-esque.
Yeah. And I think there's some kind of positive vibe in this where the bad guys are obviously bad guys, but they're not really the antagonist at all. Like the way that there's not a long frustrating period where no one believes Billy. Like that gets over and done with pretty quickly and everyone's on board and everyone's just trying to beat the gremlins. So like even the bad guy, even Clamp himself, is quite likable.
Yeah, that bit was a bit confusing, I thought, because they go into some specific attention to detail around how evil this place is, i.e.
yeah.
the firing the guy for having a ciggy break.
Yeah, actually, you know what? Yeah, right. You
but
are
then
right.
He's not really a bad guy. He's kind of a bit of a hero at the end and very lovable and like you kind of like him. And he likes Billy's work early in the movie, so you never don't really like him.
That's interesting because I was thinking the same thing. I forgot that the owner of the store died because I had a similar thing where I was like, fuck, they make you like him, but didn't he destroy that guy's store? And then when he said he died, I was like, oh, okay, that makes a bit more sense now. But you're right though because the people getting fired on the spot and that kind of shit, although that was maybe his number two more
than
it was
he didn't
himself.
Do it. The other guy did it.
It seems like maybe he's created this company so big that he's lost control of – because all the people under him are harsher than he is. Because remember, like, Billy's boss told him, you know, don't do this, don't do that. Whereas he comes down and he's like, oh, I love it.
Mm.
So maybe he's more bad by you know, not being involved enough and stopping other people being jerks.
Mm.
Like but it is interesting. Cause it,
nah, he's weird.
It might make – yeah. when I was a human – oh, I mean, I still am a human. Have you seen that?
Smoked where he does meats. That? No. Does he talk about?
He actually slips up and says, when I was, oh, and I still am a human. It's so funny. I'll find it. I'll put a clip in.
What is going on?
But it is going to bother you because you're human and I was human. I am human still. But I was just referring to myself in the past. Not that I was not human.
So actually maybe you found a little flaw in this, Greg, because maybe it would have been nicer if it was maybe through the – and maybe that's what they intended, but if it was through the process of banding together for the greater good that, you know, Clamp's heart grew 10 sizes that day and he decides to change his ways or something. Might have been a nice way. Again, it's cliche, but this movie is embracing all the cliches.
Mm-hmm.
That might have been a nice way to round it out perhaps.
Mm. He's also played how he was the Luther character, Lex Luther character, whatever the name was, in Smallville.
Yeah, which I never really watched, but he looked familiar. And then once I saw that, I was like, oh, that's what it was.
Did have you watch it? A little bit. Yeah. She's a babe.
She's a babe. He was great.
He was terrific.
Often those bad guys, they're
lame.
The fact that we're even talking about him this long, they're lame and they're not, they're kind of one note. But he was complex because it's, is he a bad guy? Is he not a bad guy? He brought something to this. He could have just been a faceless bad guy, but he brought something to this, Greg.
It's my kind of billionaire.
His name. Yeah. John Glover.
John Glover.
John Glover. He has a name. His name is John Glover. Now, there is talk of a third one, Greg. Apparently there's been on and off talk for a long time, but it seems like now's the right time because, you know, we get Bill and Ted 3, we get new Star Warses, new Terminators, new Blade Runners, new Ghostbusters, new Halloweens, new Jurassic Parks.
New
Why not?
Germans. And from a cast perspective, I reckon Billy's probably obtainable.
Absolutely. They did a Doritos commercial recently with Billy and Gizmo. practical puppets and everything. And they say it was a good proof of concept of how achievable a movie would be now. With new technology, they were able to do the puppeteering like quite easily.
Yeah.
Because now you can have more wires and shit in the shot that you can just remove with CGI. And Chris Columbus says he's written a script. So it's potentially happening. And he is adamant that it will be practical effects. But he's likened it to The Force Awakens, where it's sort of a – it's a sequel, so it's not a remake or anything like that.
Mm.
But it's a sequel that's
– independent of
– I guess could appeal to a new – yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I don't know.
Which I'm okay with, I guess. But I think just make the third one. Like you don't have to
– don't get too clever.
Yeah.
There's a formula here.
I just want to see the third one. I do, you know, the fact that this one was so, was making fun of sequels and stuff, I think there's maybe ripe territory to make fun of the 30-year sequel, which is the trend now.
Because,
you know, there's like Jurassic World, what if it was a theme park with Mogwai in it or something? You know, there could be some fun to be had there.
There's plenty.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's fun galore.
There's fun galore. So I'm happy for it. Apparently HBO Max is making an animated prequel about the Mogwai, which I'm okay with, as a series, a TV series.
Origin story?
I suppose, a bit of a...
Origin story.
Yeah, a bit of an origin story.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with that, you know, one that I'm okay with having these things on the side here and there to just add to the lore, but I want a proper third one. The whole time I'm watching this, I'm like, oh, there better be a third one coming because...
Oh, really?
It just felt like... I mean, a trilogy is such a nice round number, isn't it? I would just love to have a third one.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm all for it. I'm all for it.
Yeah.
What about like a Gremlins versus Aliens?
Yeah, I'm into that. I'm so into that. They could make fun of cinematic universes. Man, there's a lot of fun to be had.
Yeah,
if there was all the shit they were taking the piss out of back then, there's so much fodder. They could do Warner Brothers shit. It's funny because a lot of the shit we're talking about and a lot of shit they did in this movie, I guess they could have done with the new Space Jam, which I haven't seen. Was there any similarities there?
It's on high rotation in my house, but I haven't sat down and watched it properly. So I couldn't tell you.
I've heard it's not very good.
Oh, really?
But a lot of people will tell you this isn't very good, so I don't know.
It's Bruce's favourite movie at the moment.
Fair enough, man. Oh, get him into basketball.
Yeah, he's got a basketball. He's working on his dribbling.
Nice. Should we get into the verdict?
Yeah.
I don't know what to say, really.
I don't remember asking you a goddamn thing.
I am the law.
I'd like an answer to the question, Judge.
I want to have them answered immediately.
You can't handle the truth.
What are you waiting for?
Say what again? I dare you.
Nothing further,
Your Honor. And that's all I have to say about that.
What else could I say, Greg? I like this movie. I don't even know how to sum up why. It just is my perfect movie.
Mm-hmm.
I had such a great time.
Oh, good. I'm glad you did. You know, you know what it's like when a movie, you've got a sentimental attachment to a film.
Yeah.
And then we review it. You kind of, you want the other guy to, I want you to like it, the films that I liked when I was a kid. It's nice. It's nice to know you like it. Good news.
I like it. Yeah, good news. Did you like it?
I did.
Yeah.
It was fun. And what was interesting was that I couldn't stop thinking about, you know, the Disney Pixar type arrangement of a film where they have it at two speeds and a parent can watch Shrek or whatever Toy Story and be watching it on a whole different level to the kids. And I don't know that was the intention here, but it was certainly the net result for me as a kid just watching all the fun and then obviously understanding the satire when I was older. Now.
I think there's a nuance there as well though in that I don't think this was really made for kids. I think it's a bit like South Park precisely. Where it just kind of looks like it is, so you did.
Mm.
But my fear with the third one is that it will be for kids. Like, you know, not that Ghostbusters wasn't for kids, but just the way that a lot of the trends with these 30-year sequels or whatever is
they're hunting
we're making
in the
about
audience.
Kids.
Yeah.
and it's all about kids. They look at those Stranger Things guys in there. Everyone loves those guys.
Oh,
like,
imagine
I'm not
if they
that pumped for the new Ghostbusters.
Them.
Yeah. So, like, what I love about movies like this and the old Ghostbusters, and not to say that you can't change things. I'm not that guy, pal. I'm not that guy. And I just think that there's something so hilarious about these ludicrous movies with just very mediocre adult humans in them. Like, that's part of the fun to me. Versus a kid being in there, and of course a kid would get it, like they're kids, but I don't know, there's something funny about boring old men responding to the absurdity. Yeah. Did Simpsons do it? Yes, we covered it last time. There's a ton of references.
Mm-hmm.
The grandma on the side of the bus, etc. Porn parody, I was brave enough to Google it. Aside from some fan art, there's no official porn parody, it seems.
Yeah.
Bechdel test, probably not. I think the female gremlin is probably the opposite of Bechdel test.
Mm.
It's a bit of a Smurfette trope there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a point there. She's alive at the end. She's the only one that survives, so maybe that's a point.
Probably maybe still Bechdel living bucket. Happily now. Who's to say the third wouldn't be centered around her?
Because he's like, at the end, he's like, yeah. Did you notice that?
Yeah, he's
so
up
like
for
the joke
it.
Is they got married or something, and then she shows up at the end, she's not dead, and this guy's like, I guess I could do worse. That's what his face says.
Can you imagine banging a gremlin?
Maybe the third one should just be their love story.
Mm, we all mucusy and whatnot.
There's so much inconsistency in like the gremlins' behavior. Like sometimes they kill you, other times they just want to chat. Like it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I like that volatility.
Yeah, same. FX test. Oh, fuck yeah, man. Mm-hmm. I thought even the electricity gremlin was cool.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about him.
It was all great. Yeah.
They're all there.
The bat one that gets in the cement.
Very
although I don't know why wet cement doesn't count as getting wet.
Don't
go too deep. Yeah, it ain't that deep. This isn't really a recast-y's kind of film, though, is it?
No, it wasn't for me.
Yeah, I got nothing there. Just bring them all back.
Bring them all back.
Well, Phoebe Cates is due for some screen time, I think.
Oh yeah.
And you know what? MVP. I think I've got to give it to John Glover as Mr. Clamp himself.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, times two. Why not?
He brought a lot to this that is, you know, I would say above and beyond. The other guys are kind of blank slates, so it's hard to give it to, like, Billy. He's good, but it's, I don't know, the performance is what it's a thankless role perhaps a little bit.
A necessary blandness. I did did like, what's his name, Mr. Vampire? Not the TV vampire, the lab man.
Christopher Lee.
I enjoyed
him. Yeah, he was good.
They're all good.
Yeah, he was good. They're all good, man. And we had John Astin in there as the janitor guy.
Of course.
Mr. Gomez.
Yeah.
And that was good too. Maybe that's a low key for me actually. He was great. Because I didn't recognize him right away and I was like, man, even these small roles, the performances are amazing. And then I was like, oh, it's John Astin.
it's a highly decorated performer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Peppered.
Sean Astin Sr. Yeah, peppered. It shocks me that, like, Roger Ebert hated it. Siskel hated it. It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you never know.
I love it so much.
There's no accounting for taste.
Yeah. And, yeah, to be fair, it's the kind of movie where if you don't like it, I can't really defend it because any flaws that you point out in this movie, they're probably there. So there's nothing I can say. It just works for me. It's on Netflix now if you're in Australia, so go check it out if you haven't seen it in a while. Strong recommendation from us.
Yeah, couple of hour and a half of silliness.
Yeah.
You won't be bored.
What are we doing next week? Are we into Christmas movies yet?
What are we doing
fucking
next
hell,
week?
What is this year?
I've got a mental blank. It's not.
Aliens?
Aliens? Alien. First one.
Yeah, we're doing Alien next week, guys.
Alien, oh, that's a big one.
That's a massive one.
It is.
Fuck yeah, I'm excited about that.
Me too. Might go start it now.
Whew. I tell you what I'm not excited about. I can't start it now because I've got a 6:30 a.m. meeting tomorrow.
6:30 a.m. Oh,
Yeah, this is my life now, Greg. I'm working on US time.
That is an early meeting time.
Yeah.
If it makes you feel any better, I'll probably have some digging his elbow into my face at 6:30 in the morning as I poorly attempt jiu-jitsu. I'm too old for this learning curve. It's terrible.
Oh, man. That's all right. You get there. It's just like watch the Will Smith thing and you'll get pumped.
I'll watch Alien.
Start writing your memoirs.
Memoirs. There's a lot of scene missings in those memoirs, Tristan. I'll need a ghost memory. Ghost writer who can remember things. Oh, we've got a visitor. Say hello.
Hey, Brucey.
Hello, friend of the show. Leave a review.
Leave a review.
Okay, yeah.
You want to go up to bed?
But I have a haircut.
Me too.
Yeah, Tristan got one too. Okay, buddy. Thanks for the,
back to the show.
Thanks for the, yeah, we'll leave that in the show for sure. Good night, buddy.
He loves when we get reviews, doesn't he? We'll see you next week, guys. As little Brucey said, leave a review. Don't break his poor little heart.
Yeah.
He's a sweet boy. Why would you do that? And in the meantime, we'll get busy on making another episode. We'll release it same day next week and you can have a little listen then.
Yeah.
We'll see you then.
Gremlins to Aliens.
Yeah.
To Alien.
Seamless. Alien.
Alien. It's on Disney Plus, I believe.
Yeah. That's a treasure trove, isn't it?
It is. All right, guys. Catch you.